The following KOPN podcast is made possible by the generous donations of listeners like you. Please consider a donation to listener-supported community radio, KOPN. You can donate securely on our website at kopn.org.
This is Janelle.
And I'm Rich.
And we are the voices for the human rights of babies. And we're coming
babies
to you.
Babies don't need human rights, do they?
Yes, they do.
No.
We're coming to you from Columbia, Missouri at KOPN 89.5. And we aren't here on the first of the month, so it seems like we've been a long time since we've been here.
You people have been spared our rantings, I guess, huh?
So, we always start out with some news that's going on. And if you're listening, if you've been following us, we've been talking a lot about circumcision and birth trauma. And we've had many, many guests on telling us different aspects of the impact of birth trauma. And today we have a guest who is a primal therapist from California, and his name is Belden Johnson.
For you people in the audience out there who think this is just a psycho hokum that has nothing to do with you and you're just fine, you may be surprised to know that around 80% of the men in this country certainly suffer from some form of birth-related trauma due to their circumcisions as infants. And you may not remember what happened, but you are certainly paying the price for it in a number of different ways. And so you should listen closely because you may discover things about yourself that you never suspected.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that with Belden. He is a primal therapist, and he co-founded the Primal Center in the Bay Area in 1979, and he's a writer. And he's recently published a new novel called Fathers and Teachers, and he's going to tell us about that as well, because he does talk about the primal period in this book. I don't know if we're talked out. We talked for several hours today, and boy, it was pretty overwhelming, because I've been doing some more research on circumcision and just finding the most atrocious things about what's going on.
It's a cash cow. It's a cash cow for the biotechnology industry.
Yeah, you know, and we're going to talk about birth trauma today, and we're going to talk about not women's birth trauma, because people think that it's the woman's birth and she's giving birth, and people forget about the baby, but the baby experiences birth. So we're going to be talking about the baby at birth. And, you know, male babies and female babies are both experience a lot of the things that we've been talking about over the last couple of months. All of the interventions that aren't necessary that interrupt the physiological flow. But what happens to the male baby? Mm-hmm. Males and females both have this birth trauma, but then I'm just so overwhelmed recently with the impact of this on men. And I realize that we're talking on the air a lot, and there are men out there who are experiencing maybe first time hearing this. I know you've talked about the first time you've heard it.
I'm circumcised. Most of the men in this country are circumcised. I had no idea what was entailed. I didn't know what was lost. I didn't know anything about it until I just stumbled on it on the internet. And what medicine has been doing to this culture for the past 100 years, I mean, Osama bin Laden would be proud of what they have accomplished, put it that way. I mean, it's as if we have terrorists in our midst, you know. I mean, I'm not saying
Who are the terrorists? We talked before about some research mm-hmm. that someone did in Canada, and they hooked up the babies and they checked their brain waves while they were being circumcised, and the person who did that got in trouble for doing that to babies. He got in trouble for using them as research subjects, hooking them up, and he found that their brain waves. Do you remember the details of that? I don't remember the details of exactly what they found.
Well, I know that they found that there were permanent changes, at least at the six-month, I think there was a six-month follow-up period, and they discovered
they found it at the time of circumcision,
yes,
at the hormones.
Of course. I mean, it's an overwhelming experience. If you can imagine your most sensitive tissues, genital tissues, being, the way they usually do it, in about 50% of circumcisions, they don't use any anesthetic.
And I'd like to say, so what? It's still harming the baby.
Well, yeah, sure.
I just don't want people to say, well, as long as you anesthetize the baby, it's okay.
No,
it's not
okay, because you lose precious erogenous flesh, which is, you know, nature's design for bonding you to your lover, you know. I mean, this country has more than half of marriages in a divorce in this country. And this is like twice the rate of Europe, and Europe does not do circumcisions. And I think it's pretty obvious there's a huge connection here. This is not at random. This is not random correlation.
Well, I haven't told you this yet, but Jody McLaughlin, who is the editor of Complete Mother magazine, told me that she has suggested that they hook up the adults who are doing the circumcision and
exactly.
see what their brainwave
exactly.
is, because you were talking about the terrorism.
That
would be a phenomenal research to actually hook up and see what happens to their heart rate, what happens to their brain scan, because they can tell by brain scans now what is going on in the brain.
Do you remember the article that it was linked from my circumcision article about the obstetrician, I guess they were pediatricians or something, who were obsessed with this young child's foreskin. This child miraculously survived.
It was a botched up, they destroyed his...
That one? No, I'm talking about...
Oh.
This was a sadomasochistic enterprise, really. I mean, it was a sadomasochistic process that was published in a mainstream medical journal. And, you know, they I'm not even going to go into it over the air, but it's just unbelievable how they treated this child. And this was not an infant, okay? This was, I think he was 6 years old when they did this. And they made a big research paper out of it and published it in a mainstream medical journal. And it's right out there in black and white for anybody to read that these people obviously have something weird going on in their heads when they do this to children.
Yeah, and this article that I wanted to mention today is a piece of research out of Sweden.
And we have talked about how this can happen because, you know, circumcision, birth trauma in general, creates the emotional conditions in the victim for perpetrating it on babies when they grow up.
Well, you disrupt that mother-baby bond, and then the mother's no longer able to protect the baby.
This is all about a looping social structure. That's why it's so very destructive in society. We're talking about processes that create their own self-perpetuation. It's like an entity which has infected the human race, or at least American.
Yeah, and you know, I pre-apologize to anybody who is really dealing with the information that we're giving you, and I'm going to push it a little bit further, because we do have Belden here who's going to help explain it all to us, how men can heal. And but I think the public needs to know that the foreskins are being sold commercially, and they're being used to they're being used in face makeup. They're being used to generate skin that they're using for grafts. This research project, or this research paper that I pulled up today, and under methods, it says we used postnatal commercially available human foreskin fibroblasts as feeder cells. And then in another article, it says that one foreskin, this is one little tiny newborn foreskin, can produce 4 football fields of skin.
It's full of stem cells.
Yeah. Well, maybe that's a nice thing to do things for people diabetes who need grafts on their feet and burn victims. But the thing is, this donor is non-consenting.
Yes.
And that tells you that they know there's some reason why they're so persistent in getting parents to circumcise. And somebody is making money.
There's
so I have a circumcised son and nobody paid me.
Yeah,
but here it is.
Parents,
saying commercially.
Yes.
Commercially available foreskins.
You would think that.
How is this happening?
Yeah, how is?
We need to wake up here.
There's all kinds of conflicts
of
interest.
I'm not giving Rich a chance to talk.
No, I mean, there's all kinds of conflicts of interest, financial conflicts of interest in obstetrics, dealing with everything from circumcision to breastfeeding and formula, you know, marketing, and it's all destructive to children. And they're selling, you know, junk food to clueless mothers who think it's equivalent to breast milk, and it is not.
And we're getting carried away, and we need to bring Belden on.
Let's get him on.
And I don't want people to be too overly activated, but I do. He is going to help us explain the whole healing process. And what he said to me earlier when we talked is that by the time people come to him as a primal therapist, they already know, like you, that you've been profoundly impacted by your circumcision, and he says that's half his job. So our job is to keep at it and keep informing people to read the information and process it.
Folks, I'll
bring him on.
I don't want to, you know, be overly self-promoting here, but you're listening to a show which is virtually unheard of anywhere in the world. This is a show that deals with issues of profound importance, which are not being talked about hardly anywhere else. So KOPN, kudos to KOPN for allowing us to put this on the air.
Absolutely, because we're more than just a childbirth show.
Yes, this is not about, you know, this is not about birth fashion. This is not about choosing shoes for your new baby. We're talking about your baby's happiness, your future.
We're talking about humanity.
Humanity, survival.
Humanity.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, well, let's bring Belden on, and he can tell us about his book. Hey, Belden.
Hey, Janelle. Hello, Rich.
Hey, welcome.
Hi.
To KOPN. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you for having me.
Where to jump in, huh? Can you tell us about your book?
Well, let me start out with just what, reframing a little bit what you guys have been talking about, because both what happens to us at birth and what happens to male babies at circumcision are examples of some of the unconscious wounding that we carry with us in our culture. Most of us don't remember these experiences, and we don't think that they're impactful on us. I mean, you know, they were a long time ago, they were in the past, and I'm doing all right, everything's great. So they tend to be out of our consciousness for most of us, and then we go on perpetrating the same wounds against future generations because we are not conscious. So you guys bringing consciousness to this is a very, very, very important part of the process. So this book that I just wrote, that you can, all of you listeners who are interested in it, can get it through Amazon.com. It's called Fathers and Teachers. It's a novel about growing up male in America. And I thought I'd read you just a little bit from this, to give you a sense of the flavor of the book, but it also happens to be the situation in which our hero, Billy Wilson, first discovers that his penis is different from other people's penis, and that is when his friend Fax is showing him the outhouse. Now, Billy has an indoor toilet, and an outhouse seems like a very interesting structure to him. And Billy says, "You mean you don't have any toilets inside your house?" For a moment, Fax looked like he wanted to punch him, and Billy almost got ready to fight, but Fax looked away and said, "Nah. What do you do in the middle of the night when you have to pee? We got us a chamber pot under the bed." "What's that?" He could see Fax holding himself back from calling him dumbhead. "It's a pot to piss in. Doesn't it stink?" "Yes, sirree, Bob, it stinks. How would you like to be the one that has to empty them every morning and rinse them good so they don't stink all day?" Fax shook his head. "I dump them in here," pointing to the outhouse hole. Billy peered into the dark hole. Rather than the stink, the odor that came out like a sword was a sharp one. "That's the lime," Fax explained. He showed Billy how to dip the chalky powder out of a bucket on the floor. "After you've done your duty," he said. Billy could hardly wait to try it out. "Do you pee in it too?" "Yes, sir, B. Bob. Got to pee? Sorta." "Let's see who can pee the fastest then." The race was on. "But don't go and hit the seat, none," Fax cautioned as he unbuttoned. "Mamaw'll skin us alive." Aiming carefully, they hit the dark hole rather than the sanded wooden seat. Fax was staring at Billy's penis. "They done sized you up," he said. "What's that mean?" "They done cut the cap off of your dick." He showed Billy how his was different. "Must have hurt like hell when they cut it off," he said, buttoning back up. "I don't remember," Billy said. "I wouldn't let nobody take and trim my dick cap off with no knife," Fax said, shaking his moon face shape. "I was a baby," Billy said, looking about for a handle to flush with. So one of the things that happens is that because so many of us are circumcised, as you pointed out, Rich, we normalize that. We just go, well, that's just the way things are. And as Billy is growing up in a small Virginia town, he gets a larger cultural perspective, if you will. And he finds out that there are a lot of his friends that weren't circumcised in the way that he was. He's going, what's going on with my penis? Now, we wonder, you know, well, what's the big deal about that? Well, first of all, as you mentioned, Rich, there is a, no pun intended, rich supply of nerve endings in the foreskin. About 80% of the nerve endings in the penis are in the foreskin, and when that's removed, our sexual pleasure is diminished by that percentage. So, yes, we tend to bond less with our lovers. This causes
permanent neurological changes in the brain.
And in the penis. I mean, it's both happening at both ends.
They don't connect anymore.
And there's a much less of a connection therein. Another thing that happens, of course, you know, in 35 years of practice, I've seen a lot of clients, and just about every man I've worked with, sooner or later, talks about his concern that his penis is too small. Now, certainly this comes from the gargantuan men in the porno films. As one man said, God, if that's a penis, what am I walking around with? But another thing that happens is that, in fact, those of us that have been circumcised, our penises are smaller. We have been butchered to that extent. Mm-hmm. And I suspect that there's a correlation between these two facts, that we have been circumcised and that we sort of, at some unconscious level, are walking around going, geez, I'm not what I used to be.
There's actually a what they call a disease, Peyronie's disease. Which
correct.
Which is seems to be a common complication of circumcision. I mean, circumcision itself is a complication, but apparently in some cases they remove so much skin that the penis becomes deformed.
I didn't realize Peyronie's was connected to circumcision. I didn't know that. I thought happened to...
There are congenital versions of it, but in some cases it's a result of taking too much skin or asymmetrically removing skin.
Uh-huh. Well, it would make sense. So... one of the things that happens in primal therapy is that we have ways of going back in time and recovering some of these experiences of what it's actually like to go through these experiences. And I certainly, you know, as a Harvard-trained scientist, I did not have any belief that I could remember my birth. I mean, people can't remember their birth. And as I was going through my own therapy, all primal therapists have to go through their own therapy, which makes it somewhat unique. I started getting into these very, very strange feelings, and my body started doing things that a observing part of me outside of me was looking at me and saying, my goodness, really seems like you're not only remembering your birth, but reliving it. Your body is moving like it's trying to get out of the birth canal. And this observing part, of course, I went, well, that's impossible. What I'm observing is impossible. I had never heard at that time, this was in 1982, I had never heard about birth feelings being recoverable. And I didn't know anybody that had done that. And in fact, my therapist had never seen it before and brought in a supervisor to help work with me on that. So the therapist certainly did not lead me there. He didn't realize where we were going himself. This is something that came up spontaneously within me. And as that happened, and as I continued to go through and more deeply and deeply into these feelings over several sessions, I am absolutely convinced that I re-experienced my birth. In fact, I called up my mother and said, Mom, you know, when I was born, did my shoulders get stuck? And there was a long pause on the phone. And she said, how did you know that? She said, when you were getting born, it was the first natural childbirth at New Haven Hospital. And everybody would come down, all the doctors and nurses had never seen one, and they all came down to witness it, and your head came out right away, and then your shoulders were so broad you were stuck for about an hour.
You're telling me that all these doctors and nurses had never seen a natural childbirth?
That's correct.
Well, they still haven't.
This was 1943, and they had never witnessed an actual childbirth without drug intervention.
Without induction and forceps
all that stuff.
Yeah.
So one of the things that you know, I certainly had to have a change of my paradigm when I realized, my goodness, I can remember my birth. And I can actually objectively verify it in various ways. That was just one. There were other ways that I did that. But it was because I was inside it, I was very, very clear of what had happened, and I was also clear, it became very clear to me how this experience impacted me profoundly and made a tremendous difference in the rest of my life. that experience, for instance, of being shoulder stuck for an hour, led me to vary between extreme rage of at being stuck or trapped. The boys in my group, as I grew up as a boy, they knew they did not want to push me into a corner because they knew I'd go absolutely berserk in that case.
To clarify, you're making that connection? That's one of the examples of something that's happening in our life right now could be that's something, an issue or what problem could actually be a result of the early experience.
Thank you for restating that. Yeah, that's very, very true. That in point of fact, what I have come to understand that it is an enormous amount of who we are in the present tense has been laid down for us very early in life. And this is one example of it, of that exceptional rage that I would get into when I was trapped or cornered.
You were saying that this was only one aspect of it? What was the other aspect?
Another aspect of it is that after the rage passed, I would go into a sense of helplessness and hopelessness. There's nothing I can do. I'm just going to have to give up and die, which was the experience that I had at birth.
What was the umbilical cord caught or what?
No, I just had broad shoulders. And an interesting story, the happy part of this is that when my older son was born, I told the midwife this story, and she says, oh, no problem. Well, my older son had my shoulders. He got stuck. Midwife reached in and just gave him a little tweak, and he was out 2 seconds later. So he was stuck for 2 seconds. I was stuck for an hour.
Was your mother lying on her back?
My mother was in the standard birthing position.
So that's not a natural birth, right? I mean,
no. No, it's not a totally natural. It was. They called it a natural birth because there were no drugs administered.
Yeah.
Right. And now they call it natural birth if it comes out of the woman's birth canal. That's a natural birth.
As opposed to a cesarean.
Yes.
Right.
Right. People don't realize how traumatic cesareans are to babies too.
Yeah.
I mean, they've done research into the effects of this type of delivery, and it's not delivery. That's the problem.
Yeah, there's something about going through the actual process of being born that is extremely influential in triggering a lot of our early genetic material and starting things happening. And a lot of the cesarean-born people that I've worked with in therapy have said that, you know, they just sort of wait around in life for somebody to help them out.
And often in a panic.
Wouldn't this be a great technique for social control to make passive people?
Yes, it would. I see where you're going with that.
I'm sure it's just an accident.
Crime radio.
Yeah,
another thing, to come back to your theme of circumcision, another thing that, try to get this in before your break here, is I re-experienced very, very painfully my own circumcision. And I included a section on that in a poem I wrote in a book called Snake Blossoms, a book of poetry published by Berkeley Poets Press in 1976.
Speak up, please. Head
on. Okay. So this is from my book, Snake Blossoms. It's called This Is My Penis. This is just a part of it. I will not inflict you with the entire poem. This is my penis. In relaxation, as you see it now, it hangs like a pennant, like one of the smiling paper fish that grow fat in the spring breezes in Japan on Boy's Day. It has hair around the neck like a turkey growing fat for the Thanksgiving slaughter. Here is the scar where they slit the throat all the way around to steal my flesh before I had words to protest. Now I have words, and I am regaining a voice long stifled. My scream of pain under the butcher's knives returns. I feel the hands disposing of my body, forcing apart my clenched legs, tying back my clutching hands. I feel the icy blade hot with my blood. Pain leaps through my pelvis, belly, heart, throat. I am screaming. I am screaming with pain, and I am helpless to stop them. Butchers of my body, you are hurting me. You are mutilating me. Get away from me. I hurt. I hurt. I hurt. This is my penis. This is the shaft, and this is the head, which used to be covered. On the line of their joining, you can see this brown scar.
Boy, that's powerful.
Did you actually remember the pain? I didn't remember the pain. I certainly remembered being fondled.
I re-experienced the pain, and it was not a pleasant re-experience.
Did they fondle you?
I don't remember the fondling.
I remember the fondling. I didn't know what it was until I found out how they did circumcisions, but I was definitely being subjected to some kind of a sadomasochistic process.
Mm-hmm. Well, as you pointed out, a lot of people, I mean, circumcision in itself, there, you know, people keep coming, trying to come up with rationales for it. I have one of my clients pointed out, he says, rationalize, you know what that word means? It's rational lies. It's really two words. So there are a lot of rational lies that substantiate circumcision. All of them have been punctured. And for any listeners out there, I really, really encourage you to educate yourself about this and think about what you want to do with your own kids, which is obviously up to you.
And I do need to take a break. It's always challenging to
go right ahead
to break into our conversation when we're talking to Belden Johnson, who is a primal therapist here on KOPN 89.5. And when we come back, I wondered if you could get into the process of healing. I think it's really important for men out there and women out there to understand that there is a process to healing. And when you were talking about your son's birth, you said that he was stuck for 2 minutes and you were...
Two seconds.
2 seconds, and you were stuck for an hour. And I know we've talked before, and I know that part of the reason that his birth was easier was because you had done your work. So I wondered if we could talk about how it is that men can heal. And I think that when men who are circumcised are able to make a choice to not circumcise their sons, I think that there's a healing aspect to that for them. So anyway, I want you to have something to think about, and then we'll be back in a minute.
We're just going to roll.
All right. In 3, 2, 1.
Whether you celebrate solstice, Kwanzaa, Hanukkah, Christmas, or any other holiday, you probably want to buy a great gift for a loved one. We have Chico bags. We have
hoodies,
Chico bags,
caps,
and much more. Stop by KOPN 915 East Broadway and get your holiday gear.
I'm not sure if that was an outtake or a legitimate...
No, it was
for real. Okay.
It was fun.
Yeah.
So we're not done.
This program brought to you by listener support and a donation from Mojo's. Coming to Mojo's on December 19th, the Hillary Scott Band.
They want to sweep the mission around. Maybe need a glass of water.
That's the Hillary Scott Band, December 19th. Doors open at 7:30 p.m. More information available at 874-1944 or at mojoscolumbia.com.
And we're back with Belden Johnson. We're a fun group here, Belden.
I can see you guys have a lot of fun.
During the break, something occurred to me. We were just discussing the sale of foreskins to biotechnology companies and how much... acreage you can get from a single foreskin with this culturing process, and I ran across a figure, I can't dig it up right now, but it was close to $1 million worth of, now this was back in 1998, so it was fairly new, but if you did the arithmetic, you know, and converted the acreage to the price per square foot or whatever, you know, somebody's making millions of dollars off of this stuff. off of a single one, single foreskin, over $1 million.
Hmm. Well, we should all get reparations.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. So, tell us about the healing.
All right, I'm going to talk about the healing, and I'm going to use the example of a woman just to balance this out. This is obviously not going to include circumcision, but the principle is exactly the same.
Whether it's birth trauma or any kind of primal trauma.
Any kind of primal trauma, by which we mean anything that happens early in life that is often out of our consciousness, but not necessarily. Things may be in... that may be easily remembered, whether it's, you know, the bully on the playground, or daddy bringing out the belt, or simply the heartbreak of a love. These things trigger feelings, and what we have discovered is that the earlier they occur, the more profound their influence, which of course makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's a lot more openness and vulnerability in the young person at that time. So I want to tell you the story of a client that I had early in therapy, and she had a particular problem of making it anywhere on time. Now, you've all known people like this. You know how frustrating it is. Somebody can't show up, and they're always 15 or 20 minutes late, and they're apologetic or not, but most of the time we tend to ascribe this to some moral failure on their part.
Mm-hmm.
or we imagine that they are not being respectful of our time. And you can see how this would impact particularly couples' relationships if this were happening inside of that. So my client would always show up about 15 minutes late for a 50-minute session. And so for the first 15 minutes that remained, she would just be in terrible feelings about being late. And she would, you know, go through her feelings, and she'd say, "I'm going to be on time next time." She'd have all this resolve, and she'd think of all the great ways that she was going to remember. And my supervisor, I wanted to, let me spend extra time with her. My supervisor said, "No, you need to stop right on time, always." And I went, "Well, gee, that's kind of cruel." Little did I understand. So at the point at which she was also ready to go to group, what we did, we started group at 7 o'clock, and if you weren't in the room ready to go, everybody's starting, they're lying down on the floor and on mats, getting into their feelings in primal group, the door was locked, and we didn't open it until the halftime. So invariably, this client would be sitting out on the front steps at halftime, weeping away, sad that she hadn't made it to group on time. So she came in at halftime one day, and this was several months into her therapy, and this had been going on the whole time. I don't think she ever got someplace on time. And she went into very deep feelings and re-experienced a portion of her birth. And I'm really glad this happened in group, because we have several witnesses to this. The marks of the forceps appeared upon her forehead.
Mm.
As she went through her feelings, they reappeared, and everybody saw it. And she went through these feelings, and when she came out, she says, "My God, I realize why I'm always late. When I was about to be born, it was near a little before midnight on the day that my mother's mother had died.
Oh.
My mother crossed her legs and waited and held me back for 15 minutes until I could be born on the next day."
Mm.
After that experience, she was never late again.
Wow.
So I tell this story for a couple of reasons. One, obviously it shows that through the capacity to become aware of what is going on and to re-experience, not to just think about it intellectually. It has to be re-experienced, and that's the hallmark of primal therapy, is it's a experiential therapy. So when somebody relives something like that, then the clarity follows, rather than vice versa. In other words, when you have the experience, it becomes clear to you, in her case, why she was late. But more importantly, it unhooks you from that compulsion. And she was able to, after a lot of preparatory work around this, she was able to, in one incident, be able to change from a lifetime of being late to being able to be free to be on time. So that's an example of how people can change, number one, but number two, of how often these parts of us that are dysfunctional or ineffective in our lives are very, very, very deeply rooted and maybe totally out of awareness, and yet we blame ourselves and each other when they occur. I know how many times I've used to be frustrated with people who are late. Now I'm no longer frustrated with people who are late. I realize it's probably something very deep and very early that goes on.
I'm frustrated with people that are early.
Well, you have the opposite problem. We'll work on that.
But people who are early don't realize that people who are late are just as frustrated at them for being early.
I know that there are probably listeners out there who have a hard time believing that the forceps imprint could show up on the woman's forehead, but we know, for instance, that the neural net of the body is not strictly confined to the head. You know, it's very intricately.
The memory's in the body.
Yeah, it's the neural net of which memories are composed includes, you know, the vagus nerve, which is entirely outside of the head, and all the other nerves that go throughout the body. There is no reason in the world to believe that the totality of our consciousness is confined to our heads. That's simply a Western abstraction that has been convenient for people to assume. And given that, it's not inconceivable that that this neural net could trigger physiological changes in, say, blood vessels in the forehead, for instance.
Yeah, our cells contain memory, and our consciousness is not simply in the brain, but in the entire body. Most of us know this at some deep intrinsic level.
Right.
And we feel it, for instance, in the very simple time when you're having a fight with your lover and you just stop talking about it and just give each other you just start hugging and your cells just go, oh, I remember this. I don't know why we're fighting. This is really nice.
Absolutely.
And you move right through it.
So, Belden, when you mentioned that people need to go through it or, I guess, experience it, I think a lot of people might have some fear come up about re-experiencing that.
Well, yeah, it's scary as heck. It's really scary to do, and it's...
In the work that I do, we know that the baby's already been through it, and the baby's already survived.
That's a really important point, and that's something that I tell my clients all the time, because as they're coming up on re-experiencing it, that's the scariest part. And they go, God, I'm afraid I'll die if I go into this. And I say, we know you won't die because you've already gone through it and you're still here. So one of the great advantages of my practice is that I only work with survivors. The ones who didn't make it,
mm-hmm.
didn't make it. And I do not have the opportunity to work with them. And there are a lot of them mm-hmm. that didn't make it. But all of us who are here were able to survive in some way. The worst things that can happen to us have already happened to us.
Well,
there is nothing worse, for instance, than to have, you know, when you're a few hours old, to have your body cut into with a knife and a portion of you removed.
Mm.
And that is something that an enormous number of males have already experienced. Women have commensurate injuries that they have also survived.
Can you, I mean, there are fairly well-known patterns of behavior relating to working through loss of bodily tissue, like denial, I think, is the first. Is there like a bunch of stages that you can talk about?
Yeah, they're the Elizabeth Kubler-Ross came up with the six stages through around people adapting to dying, and those tend to be pretty much the same that we go through, but different people go through them in different orders. And some people may start off with denial, and other people may go right to anger and then go to denial later. They start off with anger, and then later they're saying, it's not that big a deal.
How can the listener know when they're experiencing unconsciously, neonatal trauma?
Well, one simple way of doing that is to notice, of simply bring awareness to your life, and when you find yourself doing things that don't make sense to you or that are highly ineffective and you're going, what the heck am I doing this for? That's probably an example of it, whether it is being traditionally late or I just had a client today who was having an affair on his wife, and lo and behold, he downloaded all of his pictures onto her computer for the Christmas thing, and gee, there was five pictures of his lover on there. So a part of him wanted to have this out in the open. So Freud pointed this out, over a century ago, that we tend to do these kinds of things, but Europeans are very, very aware of this. Americans, we still really don't like to believe that we have an unconscious capacity.
Europeans, I understand, are often horrified and shocked to learn that babies are circumcised in this country.
Yeah, a much lower percentage of Europeans are circumcised, of male babies. Of course, you guys are aware that a lot of female babies are circumcised in large parts of Africa and the Middle East. In other words, they have the clitoris or the labia are excised, and sometimes the vaginal opening is sewn shut to preserve virginity. There's the small opening to let menstruation seep out.
So could you tell us, if there is such a thing, the process a person would go to before they get to you, and what would a session look like? Like if somebody's listening, I don't know anybody here in the area that does the work that you do, but I'm going to be looking for resources. But if somebody realized, I need to talk to somebody who does this primal therapy, what would it look like, and what?
Well, let me give you the resource. First of all, you can look on the at the International Primal Association, Google that, and that'll give wherever therapist belonging to that. Gee, I haven't paid my dues in several years. I'm not on it anymore. But the therapists in your area that are on that, you would be able to find. I don't know any specifically in Missouri, but I know
there are different modalities too. I can list. I already have on our blog, thoughtcrimeradio.blogspot.com, a list of people that do like the style or the format that I do, the modality that I do, and then several other modalities. Mm-hmm. So what can they?
Well, you asked two questions, Janelle, I'm understanding you correctly. The first being, what happens, what do people do before they come to me, and then what happens in a session?
Yeah, how do people get clued in to what's going on in their heads?
I think that I work with an extremely advanced population, and we were just, my wife who's also a therapist and I were in a suicide class last week, and I was remembering that when I was practicing in the Bay Area, where there were several centers when primal therapy was big during the 70s, that we had a meeting of all of the people, and we had a phenomenal statistic. There were something like 6,000 people that had been in primal therapy in the Bay Area over a 10-year period. We did not have a single suicide, which is just uncanny.
Mm-hmm.
Inside of a of a therapy population. The people who are drawn to primal therapy, you pointed out one part of it, Janelle, are courageous. They know, God, this is really scary, and I'm willing to do it. And they have to, it's not like another therapy where they're saying, well, I'll come in and I'll do a 15-minute session and then go home for a month. In traditional primal therapy, you begin with an intensive, which means that you leave your home and all your supportive objects. You stay in a hotel near the center, and you have an extended, open-ended therapy session every day for 3 weeks. Hmm. You do not do anything else besides eat and sleep. So you do not, you know, you do not meditate or masturbate or watch TV or read a book or write, unless the therapist gives you, you know, asks you to write a page a day or something, which mine did and which I tend to do. So all you do is go down into your feelings. Now, hearing about this is, you know, most people go, oh my God, I am not going to do that. Don't even think about that. I remember being terrified when I was coming up on my intensive. And my personality is, hey, let's break through this and have it happen and get these shoulders unstuck, is my whole orientation in life. So.
Well, and there are other kinds of modalities where that's not the process, and they are effective too. So. If people, I mean, there's something for everyone. There's a place to start for everyone.
It is scary to abandon all your support network for 3 weeks. You know?
Absolutely. And so a lot of people who come to primal therapy have already done a lot of other work on their own. And they have really raised their awareness a lot, and they're really ready to bust through the last vestiges of their dysfunction.
But I'm talking to the casual listener to this show who wonders what any of this has to do with them. How can they recognize the symptoms of birth trauma in their own behavior?
Well, that's a huge question, Rich. And what I would say is that one way is to watch when you do things that don't seem to make logical sense to you.
Specifically circumcision, for instance. I mean, there is some reason for believing that circumcision is associated with sadomasochistic behavior and also with obsessive-compulsive disorder.
Well, I mentioned, you know, if guys are walking around thinking about that they're inadequate because they have a small penis, that may certainly be a clue.
Yeah.
And, you know, women are not the ones who are complaining about small penises. It's the men who are hung up on that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that would be another example. I think, we've all had experiences in which afterward we will say, I never do that.
Why did I do that? Why did
I never
act that way?
I just did something I never do, whether it's throw a plate across the room or visit a prostitute or
pull a gun on somebody.
And so these things that
hit the child. I mean, there's a lot of things. It seems to me, you know, like when people are getting a divorce, that breaking away, that's a time when people, their traumas really come up, like the abandonment and
yep.
things like that. So, you see people going through a divorce just doing things that they would never do, usually. Just
that's correct, yeah.
And it's, I think that's a good rule of thumb, like we've all experienced interacting with somebody and you're just going, why are they reacting that way to this? Where it
mm-hmm.
doesn't make sense.
Where does all this rage come from?
So I think that's a time when as every one of us could realize, oh, that person is really in a deep part of their brain and it doesn't have to do with me.
Mm-hmm.
So if I don't react, then I'm not going to escalate it.
But you know, I'm going to give you the last word because I just realized we are close to the top of the hour. The time goes so fast. We really appreciated having you here. And if you have anything that you'd like to close out.
Well, let me just summarize what we've been talking about. What I'd like to leave you all with is three basic points that we're sort of circling around here. The first is that we are all, to a greater or lesser extent, really profoundly impacted by our personal histories. And what happens to us in early life actually has the power to turn certain genetic tendencies in us on or off, as we've recently discovered. Secondly, what has happened to us earlier in life greatly influences how we think, feel, and act in the present, even though we may not be aware that this is so. And finally, we aren't imprisoned by these influences. We can cast off our chains and be free by becoming aware of, feeling through, and gradually releasing these old wounds so that we can become the joyful, loving sexual beings that we're meant to be.
Wow.
That's subversive. That's a thought crime, isn't it?
That's very poetic. And you know, I always like to end the show with the positive and what we can do. I really appreciate that because this is intense conversation we're having.
Yeah, and this stuff is intense and it tends to trigger feelings in people. So what I would say to the audience is, you know, if you're having all sorts of feelings right now and have already turned off the radio, it's probably because this is reaching you in some way. Obviously, if you've turned off the radio, you're not going to hear that. But just the fact that you guys are talking about this and it's going to trigger reactivity in people is going to help them become aware.
Yes, and thank you so much for helping us to do that.
You're so welcome. Thanks for having
Missouri,
me.
Missouri, coming to us from California. I really appreciate it. We'll talk to you soon. Thank you, Belden.
All right, Janelle. Thanks. Thanks,
thank
Rich.
You. Thank
Bye-bye.
You.
Bye-bye.
So we're going to close out. This is Thought Crime Radio. We are the voices for the human rights of babies.
Babies don't need human rights. I'm sorry.
Stop saying that. You're kidding, I know, but
no,
people
no,
might take
I'm,
you seriously.
I'm not kidding. I don't think babies need rights. They're not really fully human until first grade, I think. Isn't that what they discovered?
So you're using that method. Thank you for joining us.
Just a reminder to the audience, absence of evidence is not evidence of absence. You know, your level of ignorance does not define reality. Okay?
Oh boy. So up next is the tech guys. Thank you for listening. This is Thought Crime Radio.
Thanks for listening.
Close your eyes. Have no fear. The monster's gone. He's on.
is he making others?